IVM. The people of India drove out the Britishers from this country and elected these Congress gundas to the gaddi and seated them on it. Today, these Congress gundas are sitting on the gaddi due to the mistake of the people. While we drove out the Britishers, we shall strike and turn out these Congress gundas as well. So said Kedar Nath Singh and was promptly booked for sedition. Hello and welcome. My name is Priya Mirza and this podcast is The Longest Constitution, where we are looking at the case history of sedition, the brief but deeply insightful history of Article 31, the fundamental right of property, and the expanding rights under Article 21. Our first story today is about a prisoner. Sunil Bathra was a convict under death sentence and was placed in solitary confinement. So Section 30, Part 2 of the Prisons Act 1894 provided that every prisoner under sentence of death shall be confined in a cell apart from all other prisoners. And Bathra petitioned whether this permitted jail authorities to keep death row prisoners in solitary confinement and argued that it violated Articles 14, 19 and 21 of the Constitution. So we saw in the previous episode about Kharag Singh, who was acquitted and was a free man but was placed under surveillance where his movements and habits were tracked by regulations framed by the UP police rules. And increasingly, the question was over due process. What if our statutes and laws are violative of personal liberty and life? And these cases are important in understanding the expansion of Article 21 to include privacy, dignity, and liberty of citizens, but as well as prisoners and detainees, and the gradual passage of how Article 21 has become the residuary of all personal liberties not covered by Article 19. Okay, now on to 1971. So, Golaknath, 1967. Bank nationalization, 1969. The Privy Purse case, 1970. In each of these cases, the Supreme Court struck down a parliamentary law or ordinance. And shortly after, the Supreme Court struck down the Privy Purse derecognition, which you would recall wasn't even an act, but more of an executive action. Indira Gandhi, through the president, called for early elections. Though parliament was scheduled to continue to 1972, and these elections, India's fifth parliamentary elections, set into motion what would shape not only the decade, but the nation and the constitution. The 1970s are a deeply insightful and a constitutionally treacherous time, but as well as a constitutionally resilient time, about what the constitution was pushed to. So the passage of MISA, the Maintenance of Internal Security Act, 1971, the Keshavanand Bharati case, 1973, the judgment which held the Prime Minister of India, Indira Gandhi, guilty of electoral malpractices, 1975, the Proclamation of Emergency, 1975, the Excesses of Emergency with Sanjay Gandhi at the helm of dark and sinister acts, the revocation of the emergency in 1977, and the emergence of the Janata Party and appointment of the Shah Commission to examine the atrocities and abuse of power during the emergency. And the terrain over which this was contested was the constitution itself. So in the 1971 elections, election manifestos of political parties called for, hear this out, amending the constitution. So changing the constitution, all right, now that is a standard feature of constitutions, that they do provide mechanisms for the amendment. And constitutions are tailor-made, quite literally, like the French concept of haute couture. And that's like visiting the neighborhood darzi to make sure that kurta fits you just right. Well, the constitution too has to be tailored, snipped and tucked, patched and embroidered to reflect the times. So what does our constitution say about how it can be changed? So a few select matters require the approval of at least half of the state legislatures, and others can be changed with a simple parliamentary majority. But an amendment requires a two-thirds majority of parliament present and voting. In 1971, the Congress won 352 seats, making that two-thirds majority a piece of cake. This room is getting hot. All right, now let's return to where we started. And what was Kedarnath Singh saying about Congress gundas? So Kedarnath was brought to court for making a speech against the government. He was booked for sedition, and ultimately the constitutionality of Section 124A was challenged before the Supreme Court. And his case was clubbed together with a number of other cases brought by assorted Muslims and communists, most of whom had been convicted of sedition. Now, previously, it was the high courts that had considered the matter. And the Allahabad High Court and the Punjab High Court had already held that Section 124A was unconstitutional. And if you remember, we saw that in the last episode in the Ram Nandan case. So consequently, there could be cases where disaffection could lead to sedition and cases where it was not. And now it was time for the Supreme Court to decide. In Kedarnath versus Union of India 1962, the Supreme Court upheld Section 124A. To quote, "Every state, whatever its form of government, has to be armed with the power to punish those who by their conduct jeopardize the safety and stability of the state or disseminate such feelings of disloyalty that have the tendency to lead to the disruption of the state or to public disorder." And what happened to Sunil Batra? In Sunil Batra versus Delhi Administration 1978, the court found that the solitary confinement of a death row prisoner and use of bar fetters on an under-trial prisoner to be violative of the right to live with human dignity under Article 21. To quote, "The liberty to move, mix, mingle, talk, share company with co-prisoners, if substantially curtailed, would be violative of Article 21 unless the curtailment has the backing of law. Once Section 30 Part 2 is read down, its obnoxious element is raised, it cannot be said that it is arbitrary or that there is deprivation of personal liberty without the authority of law." So this case gives us some background to look into the Menaka Gandhi case and what due process really means and the distinction between substantive and procedural due process and what happened in 1971. After winning the elections and demonstrating her enduring popularity in the Lok Sabha elections, Indira Gandhi got to work. H.R. Gokhale was appointed as the law minister with the clear task to speedily amend the constitution. So today's takeaways are, the first, in the Kedarnath case, the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of sedition. And this has had a long and dark effect on sedition in India. Going by the data provided by Article 14, 13,000 Indians have been charged with sedition since 2010 for supporting Pakistan in a cricket match, for writing about the farmers' protests, or traveling to Hathras to report a heinous crime. And I would urge you to look at this frightening data in India's first public empirical and investigative repository on the use of sedition put together by the wonderful team at article14.com. I've added the link below, so do have a look. The second, in the Sunil Batra case, the court expanded Article 21 to include the dignity of those who are not free, prisoners and detainees. The third, the constitution itself is a machinery controlled by the powerful and the visible. The 1970s is an electric period where political circumstances compelled a close and hard look about how much the constitution could be amended and what were the limits to that. And we are warming up to the Keshav Nand Bharti case. And of course, the constitutionality of emergency itself. Exciting episodes ahead. For the moment though, if you have questions or comments, please send them in via email. That's thelongestconstitution@gmail.com. You can also rate my podcast at Spotify and drop a review at Apple Podcasts. And can also reach out to me on Twitter, where I am at FundamentallyP, or on Instagram, The Longest Constitution. Until next time, this is me, Priya Mirza, signing out.